Hello, and welcome to our program, Prevention, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Toni Morell, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Prevention Magazine, April 2022, here on OWL Radio. W-A-L-K, away your worries. Your best stress buster. Putting one foot in front of the other. Here's how to make a walking routine work for your mind and body and guided walks to bring you to a more blissful place. Jennifer Walsh of New York City has always appreciated walking for walking's sake. My twin sister is disabled and in a wheelchair. She has never been able to walk, so the simple act of moving my body forward one foot in front of the other has always provided me with a deep sense of gratitude, and throughout my life, I have tried to make the most of every step, Walsh says. As the years went on, walking brought her more than exercise and appreciation. It brought her serenity. I began noticing the plants and flowers around me like I hadn't before. My walks made me feel calm, and I just enjoyed them for myself, says Walsh. That walking awakening led her to wonder, walking makes people feel good, so why aren't we doing more of it? This inspired my research and work in connecting brain health to the power of walking in nature, says Walsh, who founded Walk with Walsh to lead groups large and small on wellness walks. Walsh has brought the essence of her walks to the pages of a new prevention book, Walk Your Way Calm. In it, you'll learn all about how to get the most from walking's mind-clearing benefits. Here's a sneak peek. How to get started. Set achievable goals. Start small, even just once a week for 20 minutes is a great start. Then, eventually aim to walk 3 days a week for 20 minutes or longer, ideally outdoors. As you start walking more mindfully outside, you will discover just how far-reaching the benefits of nature are for your entire well-being. Consistency is key. Be kind to yourself. The most important part is that you are doing it. You are trying, and you are moving forward. Focus on your steps. Your stride provides a constant meditative rhythm. No matter where you are on your walk, your footsteps will be there for you to tune into. Even if you're hurrying down the hall to a meeting or navigating a store packed with shoppers, you can dial in this sensation and bring yourself back to the present. Think about these questions as you move to come to full awareness. What does it feel like as each foot hits the ground? What part connects with the earth first? How do your feet feel in your shoes? Observe these little details, and soon you will notice the unfailing rhythm. This awareness will bring you into awareness and all the positive, calming things that come with it. Tune in to your breath. Your breath is just as powerful a tool for engaging in your steps. So try thinking about the way you breathe. While it may sound simple, observing how you breathe with each step allows you to feel more present. And it's something you can easily return to at any point in your walk to bring your mind back to center. Your breath is one constant you can count on. You don't have to make yourself do it for it to happen. It's just always happening in the background. Then, when you do pay attention to your breath, it comes into the foreground, along with every other amazing thing happening in the moment. The worry is washed away. Recruit a friend. You may also want to organize a walking group. This will not only help you stay accountable for your regular walks, it will also add a social dimension to your practice, which provides its own feel-good benefits. Enlist a friend or a family member to join you at a regular time every week, in person, virtually, or on the phone. Both count. All count. Walk with a purpose. Giving your walks different vibrations can help make the habit more exciting and beneficial. Each of the guided wellness walks on these pages and the dozens more in Walk Your Way Calm is paired with a specific set of prompts designed to make stress disappear and to get your awareness going. I Spy Walk. How to do it. Have a lot on your mind? Go for a walk. Look around. Take in the sounds. Smell deeply. Breathe deeply. It's a great way for your brain to reshuffle from thinking about to-do lists or worst-case scenarios and instead zone in on achievable tasks. This calms your mind down. Really take in what's around you. Say to yourself or to somebody with whom you're walking, I hear a car. I smell flowers. I can sense the sunset. I can feel the rain. Ask yourself, did you feel relaxed after walking for a few minutes? Did you realize you weren't bogged down with so many thoughts? Did you have a smile on your face? Rain walk. How to do it? The sights, sounds, and scents of a walk in the rain are often some of the most powerful for your senses. The colors of the ground, trees, plants, and leaves all become new shades. The air smells fragrant and rich depending on location and time of year. Once you begin a practice of walking in the rain, you will want to head out at the first sign of showers. The landscape takes on a new personality during rainfall, and to be fully aware, present, and in tune with it is a gift to your senses and your body. Ask yourself, what did you hear? What did you smell? Did you carry an umbrella? And if so, what did the rain sound like as it hit the fabric? Grounding walk. How to do it. On the next nice day, go to a park, a beach, or another place where you feel comfortable taking off your shoes and spending some time walking. You can even pace in the backyard because you don't need to go far to receive the healing benefits of grounding, which some research suggests can boost mood. Allow yourself to be fully present. Take in the sights, sounds, and scents all around you in the moment. Spread your toes and wiggle them. Let your feet fully grasp the soil beneath you. It's not just okay if your feet get dirty. It's even better okay if they really get dirty. Walk slowly. Be aware of your posture. Feel the energy move through you with each step. Take a deep breath with each step. Inhale and exhale. Ask yourself, on what surfaces did you walk? What did you feel grateful for as you walked? Where did you walk and why is that location special? Power walk. How to do it. It's all about getting your heart rate up. The hasty pace causes your brain to release chemicals called endorphins that stimulate relaxation and improve mood. Plus, you'll get relaxation benefits from all the deep breathing. Start at a pace somewhere between a really quick walk and a very slow run. Keep your back straight and avoid hunching forward. While walking, move your arms in rhythm with the movement of your feet back and forth, just like you would during a regular walk, but faster. Your stride may feel awkward at first. However, once you begin to work this into your routine, you will get the hang of it. Ask yourself, how did your body feel when you were moving it more quickly? Did you find a specific pace at which your body felt great? How did music or the sounds around you impact your movement? Why walking is so meaningful. These are just a few of the winners of Prevention's twice annual Why I Walk contest. Proof that walking is a lot more than exercise. Cheryl Brown of Montgomery, Ohio says, I started walking with my mom as a teenager as a way to connect with her. I quickly grew to love it and have continued walking throughout my life. In college, my roommate and I would take long walks to blow off steam and along the way reconnected and became the best of friends. As a single adult, I walked to get out of the house and connect myself to an end-of-the-day routine. Once I married and had kids, walking was a way to connect with myself and my thoughts. No interruptions. Today, I walk to help sort out my thoughts for the exercise and is a great way to connect with nature. Walking helps define who I am, and it is what connects me to the world. Marty Benson of Colorado Springs says, it started as dog walks for an ill friend. Sure, I said, but inwardly I groaned. Johnny was accustomed to brisk 2 milers, sometimes twice a day. I hadn't engaged in any sort of routine physical activity since retiring from my job at a veterinary clinic 3 years prior. Still, I made it a mile on our first day together. My friend and her Johnny were delighted. Although I felt like a slug, it made me feel good to see them happy. So I kept going. Those pokey 1 milers with my 4-legged buddy transformed into enthusiastic 1 milers, then 2 milers. Patient Johnny was happy and I was thrilled. As my mileage and stamina increased, my confidence soared. I am now a professional dog walker who logs about 7 miles a day. Rain or snow, sun or clouds, my world revolves around my clients and my joy in moving. And Johnny? After his owner passed, I adopted him. Hope Schleninski from Charlottesville, Virginia, says, I was given a second chance at life with the start of my sobriety on October 5th, 2018. I then decided to make walking my outlet and changed my eating habits, making small changes at first. Now, I walk 4 to 5 miles a day, and I have lost 86 pounds. My walks are my me time, and they're every bit for my mental health as for my physical health. I'm grateful for my sobriety as well as the overall commitment to improving my health. Prevention Magazine, Health, April 2022. Meet Your Pancreas by Adele Jackson Gibson. You only hear about it if there's a problem. However, this hard-working organ supports digestion and blood sugar regulation. 1. The Digestion Dance. If snarfing down a bowl of pasta takes care of that hangry feeling, thank your pancreas, a long, flat organ that hangs out by your small intestine, liver, spleen, and gallbladder. It works 2 jobs that tame your inner beast, breaking down food so you feel nourished and satisfied, and making sure your blood sugar doesn't drastically spike or dip. The moment your chewed up food enters your stomach, the pancreas releases enzymes into ducts that empty into the small intestine to break down proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. As you digest your food, your blood sugar goes up, signaling the pancreas to secrete insulin, which allows your cells to store glucose and use it for energy. When your blood sugar eventually drops, the pancreas unleashes glucagon, which tells the liver to release stored sugars to balance things again, so you don't feel faint or cranky. 2. Insulin Intel. It's not always a perfect machine. Sometimes the pancreas doesn't make enough insulin or any at all. That's the main characteristic of type 1 diabetes, in which immune cells mistakenly attack the parts of the pancreas that make that oh-so-crucial hormone. With insufficient insulin, blood sugar remains high, which can lead to lower energy levels, increased thirst and hunger, and the need to urinate a lot. In the long run, high blood sugar can increase the risk of stroke, vision problems, and heart and kidney disease, which is why it's important to get a handle on it. Type 1 diabetes is typically a genetic autoimmune disorder and cannot be controlled through lifestyle and dietary changes alone. That's why your doctor would need to prescribe insulin to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels and give your pancreas some extra support. 3. Getting stoned. The pancreas and the gallbladder share a duct where bile and pancreatic juices mix to create a digestive solution potent enough to break down the fattiest of meals. However, sometimes that duct can get blocked by gallstones, which can cause the enzymes to eat away at the pancreas. This can feel extremely painful, especially around your upper abs and back, and it can cause nausea, diarrhea, or fever. If you have any of these symptoms, go to the emergency room as soon as possible. Don't panic, though. While acute pancreatitis is scary, 80% of people completely recover after a few months of treatment, says Santi Swarup Verge, MD, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic. To help prevent this from recurring, avoid full-fat, high-sugar foods and watch your alcohol intake. Prevention Magazine, April 2022. Health, my diagnosis. Why does this stabbing pain come and go? By Carol Carlo, as told to Marissa Cohen. It wasn't a heart attack, but one woman still has this message. Don't deal with chest pain on your own. One night, around 3 years ago, I was up late reading in the living room when I felt a sudden stabbing pain right behind my sternum. I flopped onto the rug, stretched my legs, pulled my knees to my chest, and rolled back and forth, trying to find a position that would ease the torment. My husband was already in bed, and I wondered if I should wake him, but I was in too much pain to even make a decision. Then, in less than an hour, as suddenly as the pain had appeared, it was gone. I felt completely fine. So I went to bed, amazed that something that had been so severe could have disappeared so completely. Trying to solve the mystery. I was 62 years old, and up until that moment in my living room, I felt great. I exercised a lot, taking yoga classes and going on long walks. The next morning, I Googled chest pain and diagnosed myself with a gallbladder attack, which I read could cause sharp pain lasting minutes or hours. Since the pain had gone away on its own, I hoped the problem had resolved itself. I felt fine until a couple of months later when I experienced the same stabbing pain. This time, I made an appointment with my primary care provider. She listened to me describe the symptoms, examined my belly, and ruled out a gallbladder attack. She wasn't sure what it was. However, because I was otherwise healthy, she suspected I might have gastroesophageal reflux disease known as GERD, GERD. She prescribed a special diet and a proton pump inhibitor. I took the medicine and was very careful about my diet. But since I didn't have any symptoms other than the pain, which had only happened twice, it was hard to tell whether it was working. While I was on this regimen, I told my son, a resident in emergency medicine, what had happened, and he said, "Mom, if you ever have that kind of pain again, promise me you'll go straight to the emergency room." A few weeks later, I felt it again. This time, it wasn't as severe. However, it lasted much longer. Following my son's advice, I woke my husband and asked him to take me to the hospital. When we arrived, I had an electrocardiogram and a chest X-ray. I also had blood tests, which showed elevated troponin, a marker of heart injury. I was admitted to the hospital with a possible heart attack. After several more tests, including an ultrasound of my heart and a cardiac catheterization, the cardiologist told me it was not a heart attack. I had a condition called myopericarditis, a disease marked by inflammation of the membranes around the heart as well as the heart muscles. He told me that my myopericarditis is usually caused by a viral infection. I had just retired from working as a speech-language pathologist in an elementary school, and there were always lots of colds going around. I remember that about a year before my first attack of pain, I was really sick with a virus and had to take antibiotics for a bad cough. That might have caused it, but I'll never know for sure. Finally, getting relief. My cardiologist put me on a heart monitor for a month and told me to avoid strenuous exercise. I was also prescribed a beta blocker and anti-inflammatories, which I took until a follow-up appointment showed I was well on the way to recovery. Then, last fall, I had my one-year follow-up. My heart is completely recovered. I would tell everyone that if you have terrible chest pain, don't try to diagnose yourself. Take it seriously and go to the doctor or the emergency room. I'm so grateful that I recovered and can go back to enjoying my diagnosis. Tell us about your diagnosis. Did you have symptoms that took a while to get properly diagnosed? We'd love to hear your story. Write to letters@prevention.com. What is myopericarditis? The myopericarditis Carlo experienced is a combination of two related conditions. Myocarditis is an inflammation of the heart muscles, and pericarditis is an inflammation of the membrane that covers the heart, explains Sandra Chaparro, MD, a cardiologist at Baptist Health's Miami Cardiac and Vascular Institute. The inflammation is most often caused by a virus that has traveled through the bloodstream to the heart, Dr. Chaparro says. The virus can be a simple cold, flu, or stomach bug. Or it can be something much more serious. In the majority of cases, myocarditis and pericarditis will resolve on their own without any treatment other than rest and Tylenol, Dr. Staparo says. However, in some cases, there can be more significant damage and the patient may need to be treated with medications such as steroids to decrease inflammation. In very rare cases, if there has been severe damage, it might require surgery. Symptoms may include sharp chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, heart palpitations, general weakness, pain in the back, neck, or left shoulder. What We Can Do About Pain by Caitlin Peary. When it comes to aches and ouches and so much worse, it's important to understand the mechanics behind the sensations, why relief can be so hard to come by, and the best options for treating your discomfort. Before we get in too deep, let's talk about what pain is exactly. You know it's an uncomfortable physical feeling, but it's actually much more than that. In fact, the International Association for the Study of Pain, known as IASP, defines pain as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with or resembling that associated with actual or potential tissue damage. The IASP goes on to point out that the lived feeling of pain is shaped by biological, psychological, and social factors. So your version of pain will always be different from that of your spouse or sibling. A sensation you describe as merely annoying could have them reeling in agony. As well, painful as it may be, though, pain does serve a purpose. Pain is fundamentally our harm alarm, says Sean Mackey, MD, PhD, a professor in chief of the Stanford Division of Pain Medicine in Palo Alto, California. It is an experience that keeps us out of danger. Pain is an incredibly wonderful thing when it's working correctly. The problem, of course, is that it doesn't always. Let's say you break your arm. In a healthy scenario, pain signals travel from the injury site through your spinal cord to your brain to let you know that you need care and you probably shouldn't repeat whatever behavior led you to the fracture. But if there's a kink in that pain perception system, the pain could become chronic, lasting long after the wound has healed, a mystery researchers are still trying to untangle. The burden of chronic pain. There's a bit of controversy over the nature of chronic pain and how it evolves, says Dr. Mackey. One theory, he says, is that after an injury like that broken arm, signals get rewired to the brain to perpetuate the experience of pain even though the original pain stimulus is gone. Another theory posits that after an injury, low-grade pain signals continue to travel to your spinal cord and brain, but if it's an amplifier that has been installed, your brain interprets the signals to be more intense than they are. Because so much is unknown about the mechanisms behind chronic pain, it can be difficult to treat. For acute pain like that of a headache or a broken arm, you might take acetaminophen or a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen, both of which are non-opioid analgesics that decrease the production of painful mediators called postglandulins, says Anuj Malhotra, MD, Assistant Director of the Pain Management Division at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City. And listeners, it's going to be a cliffhanger because I need to stop right there and we'll pick it up to continue more of this excellent article. You have been listening to Prevention on OWL Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio in our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience in our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Tony Morrell saying goodbye from Owl Radio.